Greetings, this is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show for you tonight. We had a guest on last night that kept us going for a couple of hours on the last show, not last night, but last Saturday. And we're hoping to cover some of the earth changes and some of the other information, but that got switched around. But hopefully we can do that tonight.
Control.
Looks like we've got a little interference going on here. But anyway, the show tonight, we're going to talk about all kinds of things.
I don't need to really touch any of this.
Nate, you guys are on.
Oh, okay. Hey.
Yeah. So hang on just a second. But anyway, we're going to talk about we're hooking up some new equipment here and trying to figure things out and trying to get everybody together on this thing. But we had some wonderful ceremony here today. Did a lot of clearing work, both personal and group clearing, and brought in all the Star Nations and just had some amazing meditations. And we did a lot of Native American singing and drumming, and we had some crystal skulls, and it's just an amazing ceremony. So anyway, I'm kind of recuperating from that, and hopefully I can hang on for 2 hours, but I'm pretty sure we can get through. The energies coming in were just incredible. And I wanted to talk just a little bit about that before bringing on the guests, but a lot of people have been calling in saying the past 3 days, they're just feeling intense energy coming in. They haven't been able to sleep. They're having incredible dreams and visions and seeing lights around their heads. It's like the veils between worlds are very thin right now. And there was some amazing energy came in over the past 3 days. So it's that full moon energy that seems to be just hanging on and still coming in. So basically there's something else going on. It could be the galactic plane, you know, getting closer to the galactic plane. It could be a lot of different things. You know, the sun might be doing its thing, but there's other incoming energies as well coming into the earth. And it might be the collective consciousness here on the earth waking up. Finally. So anyway, there's so many things going on. I just wanted a little heads up. I know a lot of people are experiencing a lot of challenges, mental, emotional, and physical challenges, and that's our bodies adapting to the new energies. And there's other groups that are doing all they can to kind of shut things down as well. So our bodies are also adapting to, you know, the chemtrails and HARP and psychotronics and everything else that is going on. You know, a big blessing and prayers out to the people affected. I know people that were in the middle of that. They call me up and they go, "What's going on? I feel like I'm getting sunburned," and amazing energy coming in and knowing the source of it. And a lot of people believe that was HARP generated and steered. You know, so judging by the people that were in the eye of it and feeling the energies around that, I would say there's definitely something else going on there, a lot more than meets the eye. But anyway, we have to pay attention because the earth is changing. She's shifting. We're shifting in consciousness. And what better way to bring in the new year coming up here? It's not too far away. December 21st is, what, not less than seven? Well, it's a little over 7 weeks away. So anyway, we're fast in that pivot point, that point where we totally align with galactic plane and then start moving back towards the downside. But that being said, we've got a wonderful guy here coming on the show right now, which I wanted to bring on the show. Beautiful energy. He does some amazing singing. You know, sings a lot of Lakota songs and other nation songs. He's done a lot of ceremony with a lot of different nations, and he brings that wisdom here with us. And he's got a lot of insights and experiences, and we're going to try to get him to share some of those insights and experiences here on the show concerning some of the Native American teachings and what they say might say is going down, or what he's heard about what's going down. And I guess we can just go from there. So his native name is Chasing Shadow. So Chasing Shadows, are you with us?
Hey, I'm here tonight. So good to be on your show.
Hey, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, hey, it's been a great day with you, James. And it's just been an honor to be a guest here at the ranch.
Yeah, I think everybody's very honored by your presence and your singing and bringing the spirit in and And, you know, I just want to share one thing. It's when you're singing during that ceremony, we did a beautiful ceremony to bring in the Star Nations and clear out any unseen influences didn't need to be there. And then followed up by your singing and the drumming. But, you know, it helped me reunite with a bunch of old friends, you know, Native American elders and things that crossed over on the other side, seemed to come in and pay us a visit again. It's beings I haven't heard from in quite a while. So I can't thank you enough for that singing and opening up that chance, you know, to reconnect with some of my old friends.
Yeah, well, thanks. And, you know, those songs, they were taught to me in ceremony. Actually, it took a long time to learn the songs to do them correctly. And some of the songs I'm still learning in the translations, you know. I have a gist of what each song is, the message of the song and what its purpose of the song. Each song has a purpose, and some of the songs that I did today was invitation songs to invite our ancestors in to help us. And then some of the songs were also prayer songs and then healing songs and also thank you songs for the presence of our ancestors here today, those who have gone on before us and those who have yet to come. Those songs are all sang in presence and honor to all that are, like I said, here today, those who have gone over and those who are yet to come, our children yet to come. The awareness that we are to pass and share those songs and teach our children the right ways to live. And these songs do just exactly that, along with our teachings and our correct living out of respect and honor. And we don't all do it perfect, but we do our best. And as long as we can become conscious of it and know that we're supposed to try, things start to get better immediately in our universe, in our own planet, in our society, and other societies that exist. I believe that that these are necessary teachings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like we've definitely strayed away as a civilization here, especially in America. And you know, the elders are kind of holding on to it and trying to teach it to the youth. But, you know, I just see, you know, if you really saw where your water came from, where your food came from, you know, you got close to Earth and you had to work at it, you know, to bring these things forward and stay, you know, attuned to nature and all that it has to offer. You know, we wouldn't have gotten so far away from each other and nature and the land. But today's society, it's very sad what's happening. These kids are getting totally desensitized. Their whole persona is based on outer appearances and material acquisitions. And you know, they've got to have all the latest toys, the latest clothes, the latest whatever. And it's really sad seeing this because, you know, when I was raised, you know, we were given some sticks and some mud and a creek and a few frogs, and we were happy as clams, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't watch TV hardly at all. We didn't get to watch that. And you know, it was just a whole different experience. But nowadays, you know, that electronic babysitter and the competition in school and the total disassociation with nature that's going on, boy, it's these times are, it's so necessary for you know, to bring back the wisdom of the ancients.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that. Like I mentioned today in the ceremony, I've been on a 7-day walkabout in the desert, and this is in our Oregon desert in the central area of the state. And some of the policies that of public lands is real. It's a real concern to me. A lot of the junipers are just being pushed over with DA cats, and they go up into spring areas and say that the juniper is sucking 90 gallons of water a day per tree. And for some reason, you know, and these trees are 800 to 1,000 years old, and They believe that some of the policies believe that they are not indigenous to the ground that they are living on. And they've lived in such great balance out there, but all of a sudden the policy is now to push over the tree, cut it, and leave it lopped, and stimulate grass growth or water in the spring area that they say now is dried up. And the imbalance is a lot of factors, overgrazing, just disrespect for what the tree really represents. A fir tree stores water, a Doug fir tree. Mm-hmm. And so does a spruce, so does all the evergreens. And then it releases the moisture in the winter because the moisture comes back from the sky and cleanses the earth. It's a pretty simple process, but for some reason the policy of the public land managers, and I won't say their names just because they know who they are, and they're lopping these junipers. Their whole idea is that a juniper tree does not store water, it drinks it. And so it's a different kind of a tree. And I've been living out there in the desert for a long time and visiting and studying myself. And I'm a geologist. I'm an archaeologist. And I'm a biologist. By nature, I watch these things take place. And this is my biggest concern in my heart, because when you mentioned the imbalance of our knowledge of what's going on our planet, it's in our policies that people are turning a cheek to get what they want. You know, their eyes are closed because, I'm talking hundreds of acres of juniper trees being lopped and people saying that now the water is coming back. Well, I'm visiting those areas, those very areas that had junipers now once, and the water was running. Now the water is no different. In fact, most likely less, what I am witnessing. And so this is just one asset of our government that creates a policy for a particular reason, and I cannot explain why it's happening, but I do know it is not something that I approve of. Mm-hmm. It's not something I can even conceive and agree with.
Imagine if you followed the money, you'd figure out why they're doing that. It's probably to create more grass, you know, and more
it is
water for more grass, for more grazing, so that they can have more cattle.
Right.
The cattle industry is probably the one benefiting from that. But it always goes back to the data always supports the money.
You know? Absolutely. And, you know, I totally get that. However, I think the bigger picture and the longer picture of the future is that it would be nice to see a policy of grazing that is a little more controlled, is a little more conscious, and maybe a lot more conscious, you know, and more, you know, there are riparian areas that are protected, and then there are riparian areas that are not, and they're making a stab at some of these areas, which is, I applaud them for that. Absolutely. But the gist of it all is the overwhelming outcome of lopping over all the junipers that they can get their hands on and on public lands is really an imbalance in the policy, period. And so I pray for that our leaders and will become conscious of what they are really doing. And they are paying attention to the almighty dollar, like you say, and that, you know, that they look at the long-term plan for our future and our children to have a beautiful desert and beautiful mountains to enjoy life in and have clean water and or have water at all. So I kind of wanted to touch on that because you brought up land issues, and that's a very real land issue in my spectrum. Mm-hmm. I don't think... I've talked with BLM personnel in the field and in the office, and those are the exact words that I get, that the juniper tree drinks the water, sucks it from. Well, if they were drinking so much water, those juniper trees would not be green. They'd be dead because there would be no more water to drink from the ground.
Yeah.
And that's logic. And so let's take a real look at what the reality is out there. and they create shade. And everywhere I go up under a nice big 1,000-year-old juniper, and the cattle haven't been and turned it into a dust bowl and exposed the roots, which is not all like that, but there are some major areas like that. It's pristine, and the grass is tall, and the trees are healthy, and the water is flowing. And then they will go into this area and lop over, give an idea of about 300 acres, 200 acres, and somewhere in there next to that spring. And what happens is there is a regeneration growth. The new junipers come up about 10 years later, and there's immediate grass, but it is only for that very short 5-year period. And then now we have a whole infestation of junipers need another 100 years to make shade, and the grass burns off and the water is gone. And so the imbalance is pretty easy to see.
Yeah, it's us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's like I'm not against grazing cattle on BLM land, but I am for the people using our public lands. I believe that we create less damage than overgrazing. There is a balance there, and it's not being supervised in a really good manner. I don't think so. And I would like to be able to use the desert along with my family and my friends and enjoy it without having to sit down under a juniper tree that is a dust bowl with 42 cow pies laying there and try to eat my lunch. And I have to move on because it's not happening.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And so, yeah, it's a concern of mine. Mm-hmm. But there are some really great things out there. And I still love that desert. And I do my walkabouts, and they're very spiritual for me. And so I cannot go, it cannot go unnoticed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So what can I do about it? It's like any facet of government, it seems so overwhelming and big for the common people these days that we don't get to vote on laws that are really important. They give us a seatbelt law. That's an important law, but I don't think I've gotten to vote on a really decent law that's really important, like a law that that states how we feel about being governor and how about how we do our jobs. You know, are we contractors? Do we have to have all these licenses just to do our trade so that somebody else is protected in case we don't know our trade? Well, we learn our trade out in the field, and we become better every day, just like anybody doing their job. You know, the licensing and the fees, and I can go on. And you know what I'm saying? It's like there's so much government and so much licensing fees and overcharges for everything that we're doing in the world today. But people have become concerned, overly concerned. And it's an imbalance in our spirituality. All we can do now is pray.
Yeah.
And sing our songs and try to teach our children that these are important things and that our government is us. We are the government, and we have lost it to somebody. And these are true words. These are not, these, everybody is feeling this. I talk to anybody on the street, anybody I don't know, a stranger, a friend, a family, a cousin, you name it. You and I, we've discussed this, and we can change it. Our worlds are coming together from other galaxies. We have seen it, you and I. Hundreds and thousands of people have witnessed, and there is a higher consciousness that is happening. And the greed that takes place among our corporate world is something that's very powerful. But the common folk, the working class, we're tired of it. Mm-hmm. All we want to do is feed our families and house them and take care of them and live our lives because it's so short out here. And praying and singing is a difficult thing to do when you can't pay your bills. Uh-huh. But that's all you have left. So it's really good to come into a place like Ysette Ranch and feel loved and feel the energy of movement from the earth, who is nourishing our bodies and who I believe really takes care of herself, who's so powerful. But like you said earlier, the rug is going to be shaken soon. Mm-hmm. And we will fall like fleas. But the earth is an amazing power. It has so many magical things that it has exposed to me personally. And I could talk about a few of them if you wanted to hear them. I'm glad to share them.
Yeah, definitely.
The world around us, the physical world that, you know, I had a few years back, maybe 15 years ago, I had things in the desert that happened to me that at some point in the early onslaught of the ongoing of the encounters, things in the sky, encounters of lights close on the ground and not being able to describe them, you know. You can call them UFOs, you can call them whatever you want, but they are unidentified to me. But after several encounters in one summer and then follow-ups the summer, a couple of years after, the encounters started and they just grew for a very long time. And then they simmered down and then all of a sudden there was an amazing spiritual power in my heart, an enlightenment that I hadn't ever really felt in a long time, but I went asking for it because of the frustrations that I think I just shared with you. My life was a struggle to live, and it was falling apart, and these craft that came in and got close with me, and I wasn't alone, you know, there was another person there with me. Things started to change in my life, and I started to question things more. I was like, you know, things shouldn't work like this. I started to find courage in myself to stand up to things that I normally wouldn't do. That I would just turn my head and become complacent like a lot of us, that, you know, well, there's nothing you can do about it, but there really is something you can do about your life and the changes that might come your way. And I chose to do that with being encountered. And yes, I was visited by beings, and I was talked to, and I was talking back. And I was listening, and I was lost without a spiritual path of a real strong direction. And I was led to a Native American ceremony, the Inipi, the Sweat Lodge, and then the Sundance. And I didn't invite myself. I was invited to go. Mm-hmm. And I was showed that I'm going there, that I'm going to there, and I'm going to die a spiritual death. I'm going to die this death, and I'm going to become a new person. And so I went to this ceremony, and I supported there for 3-4 years, and then I ended up in that dance. And these beings were the ones that led me there. They took me there. They asked me to go. And so when I ended up there, I spent several years dancing year after year, and finding some spiritual progress. There's never a perfection in the spirituality that we seek. But I found some progress in those many years that I danced. And I still am a sun dancer. I haven't danced for a couple, 3 years. But I'm resting and thinking and waiting to be called back. Because I'm being guided and I like to follow what I'm being asked to do. I have a higher power, and it's inside me, all around me, and it's with me, as you know. And so I follow that. and it's become very powerful for me, and that's how I've learned all these the songs to direct me and to direct my family, my children, and my children to come, my grandchildren, my cousins, my niece and nephews that are yet to be born, and hopefully with the grace of God, I'll be living long enough to share with those who want to hear, you know, and want to see what there's just got to be a balance brought back to our people, all of us, all our nations. And, you know, I am a singer-songwriter. I have to touch on that because I write songs that talk about these sort of things, and they frustrate me. And then when I write a song, I have some sort of satisfaction that I've gotten this out.
Yeah.
I've let it go, and now I have confirmation and satisfaction that I've shared it with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that story and that song will go a long way to share with people and bring some consciousness. And I'm not saying that my consciousness is the only correct consciousness there is, but it is conscious and it has a good message and it is pure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's straight from my heart, and I believe in it. And I think when people read your story, hear your story in a song, and feel the power from your heart and your spirituality, that they are touched. I've seen it. I've witnessed it, not just for me as a singer-songwriter, but as people who write books and poetry writers and all forms of people that communicate. And when they see something come straight from your heart, then the power, the message has been delivered. And you have touched one person, maybe two, who share that with other people, who share that with other people, who share that with more people. Mm-hmm. So it's really important.
Yeah, I know I've had your son come out to the ranch and his crew. I forgot the name of their band. What's the name of their band again?
Oh, Bitterroot. Yeah.
Bitterroot.
Yeah, they're awesome group of kids.
Oh, just amazing. And, you know, just the talent there was, I was just blown away at it. And, you know, they made a movie about Thrive. I mean, a song about Thrive, which I thought was amazing. And we filmed it and downloaded it. It got edited. I think that's as far as it went. The people I gave it to follow through. I don't know if they sent it to Foster Gamble, but your son is the same name, Foster. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just amazing. You know, is there a way that people, you know, could get a hold of your song, or is there a website or something that they could check out your music or some of your son's music or Bitterroot?
You know, Bitterroot has some of their music on Facebook. I don't have any of my music on Facebook. I just have CDs. I'm kind of old-fashioned that way. But I assume that I do have I know MySpace is like outdated, but I do have something on MySpace that you could actually go with. The Star Nation Band, that's the name of our band.
Nice.
And there's three or four songs on there that they could listen to. One's called For the People. One's called Walking On, kind of a healing song. And the other one is called Oregon Road, which is a song about the historical drama and fight to come out on the Oregon Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a decent song. I love that song. You know, my son is on the CD with his Foster and does some backup vocals on that. And then, of course, Dylan, my oldest son, who's studying engineering at Oregon State, and is quite a flautist. He plays the flute like Carlos Mackay and all those great guys. He got his first flute when he was 10 years old, and he's on the CD. He has his own CD, too. So we have a lot of music power in the family. You know, and my nephew, Colt, who's in Bitterroot, that's my nephew. And Foster and Colt are basically twins, I guess, but they're cousins, twin cousins, you know. And they just write some amazing stuff, and they just got a great following. And as you know, a lot of people know who they are, and I have to poke them a little bit here because they're just great kids. And it doesn't matter. You know, it's like sometimes we do shows with them and it just really doesn't matter wherever we go. You know, we just hear, you know, people will come up to me and say, you got great blood. You know, those kids are just awesome. Your family is just wonderful. And, you know, of course, you can't be any prouder than to hear that about your kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, both of my sons did Sundance with me. You know, they were very young and they went there and supported me and then ended up being dancers and themselves at very young ages. And they're just, they have taught me so much, you know, like children should. Your children should be able to teach you something because we're not born parents. You know, we're born children and we have to learn to be parents. And I think they've taught me to be a father, and who else can do that? You know, your children. and so I'm so proud of them, you know.
Well, it's nice because they haven't been away from spirit for so long, you know, so they come in and give you a little fresher perspective, you know, and each generation seems to bring a little more clarity on what we should be doing. And unfortunately, we're just not listening to them. We're trying to dumb them down and control them and, you know, turn them into nice little robot consumers.
Yeah. And yeah, that is something that I don't think my kids are doing very well, you know, being a robot consumer, and I'm proud of them that way. But I'm not saying they don't like to have nice things. You know, a nice guitar goes a long way in a good band. You know, it is made from a tree and it's got a nice resonance and it just brings out a good spirit in people. The music is that way. I think we all love it. But also, I wanted to just touch on my new granddaughter, Ayla Riley, who is my son Dylan's daughter, and Jessica. They have this new wonderful life and baby in their life. And the first thing that she taught me is to remember to smile a lot, because she does smile a lot, you know. And no matter how hard it gets, just smile a lot. You look at them little kids and they just smile at you, you know. And so that's a great, you know, there's a lesson right there. Grandpa, smile. Yeah. It's okay, you know. So it's awesome to have a family like this. And, you know, they have a wonderful mother and she's taught them well. And I'd like to think that I've taught them some good things too. And, but we have a very spiritual side in our family and it goes back a ways. So we have a very spiritual family. Yeah.
Great. You know, I'd love to talk about some of the, you know, it's kind of interesting, like the Sundance, for one thing. A lot of people don't really know what happens at a Sundance, and maybe share some of your experiences while you were Sundancing. You know, what it's like, you know, to be tied to a tree and you know, some of the things you have to endure and you know, what some of the visions you might see or things of that nature.
Yeah, that's a real tough one to touch on. You know, it's not a secret society by any means.
Yeah.
But it is something that it's tough to share in detail because it's very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And to share that with someone who may have never been to a Sundance or even know what a Sundance is, it's very tough to do. I'm not sure that I can do that. However, I'd love to do that. But I guess one of my best personal experiences is a Sundance I was at I wasn't dancing. It was my first Sundance that I was asked to go and support. And so they have sweat lodges there and the dancers come out and after a long day of dancing, they dust them off and they put them in the lodges and they take care of them. They give them some care.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of helpers, like the firewood gatherers and the people that gather that take care of the kitchen and keep the food for the people going. And everybody's working like busy little bees. It's a whole ton of work. And it's all done in great honor. And I was, so the I think this part I can share with you that it's really a good thing. They had a sweat lodge for all the helpers, people that gathered firewood, and I was one of those people. So they put us in the sweat lodge, and they honored us for helping and took really good care of us and gave us gifts after we come out. But one of the most spiritual, powerful things, the first thing that happened to me at a Sundance was that. And we were all standing around the fire and drying off our sweat. And it was a beautiful full moon night. It was about 11 p.m. And I won't forget it because the sky was clear, perfectly clear, not a cloud in the sky. And the stars were in. This was in South Dakota. And it was just amazing. And I'm standing there looking at the moon and just gathering it all in. And then I looked away for 1 or 2 seconds and looked back at the moon. And all of a sudden, there was this huge cloud up above the moon looking down. And when I say looking down on the moon, it was like a painted godly face, a white. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen that cloud face blowing, you know, like,
oh yeah,
old man winter. It was kind of one of those faces. His cheeks were all puffed up, and he was blowing on the moon. But it was godly, and it was a beard, the whole God thing, you know. It's just kind of wow. And I went, am I the only one seeing this? You know, because the sky 2 seconds ago was clear, and the moon was by itself, and now there's this huge cloud above it, painted picture perfect godly face. And so I nudged the guy next to me, and he looked up and went, oh, wow! And he had obviously, you know, experienced the same thing, and we discussed it the next day. And I hollered at my friend over at the other sweat lodge fire to bring his attention to it. And I looked down for a second, and I said, hey, look up above you. And he looked up, and I looked up with him, and it was gone. And he looked at me and looked at the moon again, then looked over me like, what, you know? So, you know, and then he got it. He said, well, that was for you, brother.
Yeah.
Because he didn't see it, but the two of us did. And we couldn't shut up about like old hens the next day. You know, it was a very powerful experience. So I guess things like that are going to come to you at Sundance. And to answer your question, you know, what it's like at Sundance, I think that everybody is going to be different for you. And that was my first experience of supporting a Sundance and being a helper and learning to honor everything that's going on and learning what's going on. I couldn't cover it in a conversation of 2 hours. You know, there's just no way. But in short, I think that's the kind of stuff that happens at a Sundance. That's the kind of stuff that we go there for, that we want nobody between us and our Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lessons I learned at Sundance is that was just that. If you're here to pray, we have medicine people there, and yes, we have Sundance chiefs, and we have everybody, a lot of helpers, and everybody doing everything, and they're doing their job. It's important. But I think in real spirituality, nobody, not even a medicine person, would ever step in between you and the Creator and what's going on with you and the Creator. They would offer help if you asked, but you have to ask. So it's really, that's one of the more powerful lessons I learned there at a place like that, in a ceremony like that, is that I would have to honor that. And it was said to me, you know, by an elder that, you know, you don't need me here. I'm here to be with you and help you. And if you need help, you can ask. But talk to your Creator. As people, we need to talk to our higher powers and what's going on. We don't always need someone to be there to help us understand. You know, pray a lot and ask questions. Ask. And I think if you're listening, and we can shut up long enough to listen to what your answer is going to be, hey, you know, it's going to happen for you. The more that you listen, the more powerful it becomes.
Yeah, I think we've forgotten that, you know, to listen. and take the time to listen and get out in nature and pray and meditate. And I think if we did more of that, most people wouldn't do the things they do. You know, we wouldn't have the wars. We wouldn't have the destruction of the environment. You know, you wouldn't have the greed and the competition and all the other things going on, because, you know, you'd realize that, you know, it's all one and it's all connected, and, you know, that Creator's omnipresent. You know, it's not over here and over there. It's everywhere, including you and your neighbor and all of nature. But it just seems like the path, this unsustainable path we're on right now, has strayed so far away from that consciousness that, you know, the earth, I think, is going to have to do something to kind of shake us up a bit and get us back on track.
I agree with that. That's really well said. Quiet can scare the hell out of us.
Yeah.
And you know, I recently moved to a medium-sized large city, I guess you might say, and I went to visit first, and I visited some people there who live right under the airplane path from the airport, you know, and jets going over, you know, time after time. And I knew we were moving there, and I was going, I'm a small town liver, and always have, but it was necessary that we go there. So I'm sitting there on the back porch watching all this happen and listening to this, and then finally to the woman that lived there, I said, I'm not sure if this is going to work out for me. And she said, well, why? And I said, there's no quiet here. Do those jets bother you? And she looked up and she said, well, what jets? And then one was going over and making this horrendous noise. And she goes, well, I never really thought about it. And when we finally moved there, we visited again, and she says, damn you. Now all I know is all I hear is those jets all day long. You brought it up. And she was laughing about it, but she was telling me I brought her attention to all this noise, and she had tuned it out. Mm-hmm. She had become so unconscious that what else do you do? It's like you become used to something. The train going by the house, you know, if you live by the tracks, eventually you get used to it. But in actuality, I think it's a disturbance that some people find the train soothing, I've heard, you know. Well, I don't find the jets very soothing, and I don't live far from this person now, and it's a rumble, and it's every time one goes over, it disturbs me. So I had to pick up my favorite plane to make this a good thing, and so the Alaskan Airlines, plug here, but they're a prop engine, they're not a jet engine on most of their planes, and they putter over, and they're so quiet and peaceful. So I always look up when they go over, and I said, there goes my favorite plane, because they're the quietest. You know, I know it sounds a little silly, but I do love quiet.
I was with a yogi once, this couple of them, a group, and we were meditating. And there's about maybe 8 or 9 of us together, a small group, and we're all kind of meditating together. And this jet came over, and it just came over us really low, shook the place up, made a nice turn, came back over us again, you know, came back over us again. And about the fourth time, you know, one of the guys was getting really irritable, you know, and he said, you know, what the F is with these guys, you know? It's their problem, you know, why are they doing this and everything else? And I looked over at these two yogis, and they're just blissed out, you know, in like total samadhi and everything. And one looks over to me, he goes, send love to the jet. He said, let it take you higher. He said, send love to everybody on the jet. And every time it comes over, feel yourself expanding all the way out to the jet and loving everybody on the jet, including the pilot, you know. And he said, use it. You know, whatever the universe gives to you, find a way to use it, you know, to take you higher or whatever. And I always thought that was interesting, you know, interesting way of looking at things. And so, you know, when the when the black helicopters come here and the F-15s and F-16s chasing the UFOs and everything else, I just send them big bliss bombs, you know?
Yeah.
Smile at them, and I don't think they know, you know, or I grab my camera, run out and start filming them like a crazy man out in the field, you know, but I don't think they know what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, coming to the ranch when I had no idea, you know, I was just asked to come and do this ceremony. And so I prepared for it, and I had a talk with one of your helpers here, Nate, and he said that, well, you know, do you know what we're all about up here? And I said, well, absolutely not, you know. And then he brought up it's a UFO hotspot and a few other things. And I said, well, I'm in a UFO hotspot right now, too, in the desert, you know. And but I after being here and watching your guest and watching the events that happen here and the sincerity that people bring and why they come here. And it's not just that. I know there's other reasons why they come here, but which are really, I'm learning why, and they seem like really, really good things. And, but one of their attractions is the other, to watch the sky here in the night or maybe in the day too. But, you know, I do know that obviously it is a UFO hotspot. I know that for me, if they want to see me, they will look me up. And they get a little close to me too sometimes, and a little close for my own comfort. And it's like when a spirit comes to you, and it's a little spooky, you might say, you either say, go away, or you say, welcome. I love you. Come in. Welcome. Sit down. Be with me. Thank you for coming. Whatever. You know, I've learned to do that because if I don't do that, whatever the entity that is coming in, its energy, its reality from another place, its reality is different from mine. And I'm not able to go there as easily, I think, as they are. Or I haven't learned that yet, but they obviously have. And, you know, you can touch on remote viewing or, you know, out of body. Yeah, I've done some of that, and I've touched on some of that inadvertently. You know, it's not something I go seeking. It's something that's been showed to me. And I think that we all have certain levels of power and consciousness right here with our own people. You know, we have dreams, and we have powerful dreams, and we have the capability of channeling and healing, and it's been given to us, and we have the ability to heal ourselves. But we have to learn these things, and or they're given to us in a very powerful way, and then we have to learn to use them after they've been given to us. And we grow with it, just like being a parent. We get the shot in the arm, and then we have to use it right, you know, and grow with it. And so when things like that do come in around me, they do frighten me a bit. And it took a while for me to just say welcome, you know. But there are still the sometimes that, well, it overwhelms me. It gets so close. And it's, and I'm not trying to be vague because I don't want to be redundant. And, you know, I know we've heard 1,000,000,000 UFO stories, and we know what it's all about. So details really to me anymore are not important. But really what I'm gathering from the details that happened, what am I learning from what they're showing me? They are here for a reason, are they not? And so that when I became a little more conscious of why is this happening? What do you want from me? What is it that you're showing me? When I gathered that information and got focused about why the visit is happening, then I became a little more trusting with myself And still, I kind of back down from some of it because some of it I don't understand, but they get close and it can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to decide what is, when you're in ceremony, my questions are, when I'm in a lodge and I'm visited and I see things, I call it a spirit. When I'm outside a ceremony, and not that I think any of us, life is a ceremony, period. How are we going to live our ceremony and be in our ceremony is how we adjust ourselves. A lodge, a sweat lodge, might help you adjust and live in your ceremony. You know, a solid prayer or whatever your spiritual path is going to help you live in this real ceremony out here, our physical ceremony life out here. So when we're visited by craft or just entities or anything that is trying to show us something, you know, it can be overwhelming. And as people, as physically embodied spirits, we have to go, wow, you know, we have to calm ourselves and behave and go, what is it that I'm supposed to learn?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being frightened, we have to get past that fear. And that was personally for me. I'm not talking in general. I'm talking about me. You know, I don't know what other people's experiences are, maybe a few, but I get pretty in-depth about that kind of stuff. And once I got past the phenomenal of it all happening, that this is outside our world, that really Mother's magic, the Earth's magic, its mystery and her power is phenomenal. And it's way beyond what we could ever imagine.
You know, I noticed that I think it's important that the what you're talking about mastering our fear, you know, if we are going to engage these higher dimensional beings or beings of a higher frequency, if we are holding on to fear and or lower frequency energies, you know, attitudes and emotions or even beliefs, those seem to be amplified in their presence. And so if you have a lot of fear and one of these beings appear to you, that fear is going to be amplified. And I've seen people that are like Kung Fu and Qigong masters, you know, very powerful beings, and making statements like, if they don't land or if they don't come really close, I'm not going to go forward with this. I'm not going to talk about it or whatever. And then the ships will drop down and fly right over them and they freeze. You know, they just...
Oh, yeah. Yes. Whoops.
Cameras on their shoulders and things like that. And they freeze and they go into an altered state and they can't even hear you when you're kind of trying to run to go... You know, you're going, hey, you know, camera, pick up your camera. And they just, all of a sudden they finally turn around and they look at you and then they look at the camera and they go, oh, my God, you know. And they realize they missed the whole shot. And I had one woman just saying, look, I want them to come down. I want to get on the ship and I want to do this and that. And so she comes out of the lodge and I said, well, when you come out of the lodge, everybody's going to be really high and unified and feeling good, and that kind of energy does bring them close. And so don't be surprised if they don't come in. So sure enough, we come out of the lodge and this big golden ship drops down really low and comes flying over us, and she went running for a tree and was hiding under a tree and holding on to it, you know, thinking she was going to get sucked up or something. I don't know. But it's funny because we say one thing, and we think we're ready for these experiences, but until you've had a few, and you know, and you have freaked out a few times, you're not ready. You know, it's we think we're ready, but when it happens, we find out how ready we really are.
Yeah, and that's a hard one to prepare for when you're just blissfully running along in your life, doing your job, spending your money, paying your bills, and buying cool stuff and consuming the planet. And then someday something like that walks into your life and wakes you up,
mm-hmm.
and says, hey, don't forget about us. And whether you like it or not, this is a reality. And, you know, the people that I was with when some of my first encounters, I remember I was in a van coming back from a gig out of Walla Walla, Washington, and I was a young man. I still am, but I was younger. Yeah. And this orange ball of light was all of a sudden above the freeway, above the tree line on the right. And I've heard this story before on several occasions, you know. And we all seen it. There's four of us. And I was in the front seat on the passenger side, and the driver and I were really, really entrenched in this thing. And I never took my eyes off it because I wasn't driving, and he had to. And the two guys in the back, well, yeah, they saw it, and they accepted the fact that they saw it. They said they saw it with us. But the next gig, the next weekend, they wanted nothing to talk about it. And me and the other guy up front, we were very cool and nonchalant about it. We accepted the fact that this was reality. So we opened the door, and the other two people closed the door.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're done. Mm-hmm. You're back in the physical plane. And whatever we think the other plane is, we got, now I've got 1 foot in there and 1 foot here. It's the way I live. I've suffered a lot of losses from my encounters. My life would fall apart because I could not handle the emotional stress that came with encounters, nor could people around me. But eventually I got to a place, that threshold, where I have to learn to live with 1 foot there and 1 foot here. And I struggle with trying to keep a job and try to be spiritual and try to bring those two together and be balanced in both planes. I am now living in both planes, and I have accepted that, but I have not learned to do it as well as I would like. And I think anybody that has had these kind of experience with Bigfoot, portals, UFOs, whatever phenomenon they have run into, and they all of a sudden say, now there's another reality in my life. And some people think you're crazy when you accept that, but you're living it. It's a difficult place to live. And you know that, James. It's like, boy, I have to go out and make a living, but this thing is tugging on me. This thing is tugging on me to do something else, and I don't know what it is. And so that's my struggle in life. And, you know, I'm learning to deal with both ends of it, and it's frustrating for, you know, people in my life, especially, you know, my mate and my dear wife. So but it's a bigger struggle for me because I want that to happen again. You know what I mean? I want that to happen because we want to see something powerful. And so what I've done to adjust myself, I think, spiritually, is live in ceremony inside the lodge and outside the lodge. And an elder said to me the other day that, you know, we're in this lodge preparing for the real ceremony, which is outside the lodge, life. This is just a piece that we prep here for, so that we can go out and do our jobs, take care of our responsibilities that society deems necessary, and that we have to. We have to have shelter. We're delicate human beings, you know. We can't live in a coat and under a juniper tree all of our lives, even though that's kind of romantic. It is not a reality in this world. Yes, I could do it. It'd be a very lonely life, and I have experienced it for several months. And yeah, it's a very lonely life, but it's not a reality. So all the encounters that happen in my life have taught me well. Have I dealt with them well? Hell, I don't know. Though any of us deal with it well, I mean, we just get kicked to the curb and then we get back up and see if the next guy's going to run us over, you know. But we try in life, and it is a ceremony. And I think that our society needs to have more ceremony and live in ceremony. And I think we'd have more respect for our Earth, you know. It's magic, you know. One of the recent songs I wrote about Mother Earth is called Enumaka, which is the Lakota word for Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And that song is called Enumaka, and it's about all our power and how you can nurture yourself through her. And our job is to take care of her. And we belong to the mother. We don't own this great earth. How can we possibly, you know, be in charge? You know, we fall down over a rock and we twist our ankle and we're whining. And Mother Earth is one little rock that just hurt us, you know. I mean, she's so powerful, and that's just a little thing we did to ourselves on one of the rocks that live here. So I really think that her power and her magic is great. So the song that I wrote, I wanted to touch on that. I just wanted to go, I want to sing about her. She's taught me so many great things, and she's so powerful. And so the song talks about waking up in the morning and standing in the light, and only stand out in the darkness in the middle of the night. You know, and that some folks might not know what that means, but to me, what it means and what I'm trying to express there is that, you know, don't carry around so much negativity. You know, stand out in the darkness in the dark, and don't always be in the dark in the daytime. You know, don't carry the darkness with you. Expel it. Be rid of it. Live in the light. Live in the light. And accept the darkness when it comes, but don't carry it around with you, you know. Spread the light around with people and share some love. And then I think the lines in the song go into one of the lines is, I'm talking about this song because I'm talking about the mother here. This song is very direct. And one of them is like, take care of the mother. Nurture up yourself and join up in the circle because there ain't nobody else. Mm-hmm. And that circle's big. It's universal. You know, it's from every person, being that lives in major galaxies out there, that certain people don't want to accept that there are other people out there. Mathematically and scientifically, it has been proven. Mm-hmm. We know the equation. You've heard the equation. We've all heard the equation, so I'm not going to go into it. But scientifically, mathematically, it cannot be any different that somebody else exists out there. And they're being more prevalent. When I come up here to your ranch and I hear people talk about it and experience it and see it and feel it, and I feel it. I haven't seen it, but I've been here a very short while, and I've got a few more days here. But when you talk about shifting, the earth shift, I know that an elder said to me, and, you know, this is just could be a personal opinion of this person. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that this is a fact, but come 2012, December 21st, that there's going to be many worlds that collide. And you can interpret that however you want, but to me what it meant was that we're going to be very conscious. We're going to become very conscious of a lot of people who are going to wake up and go, there are other worlds out there, and life is going to expose itself. It already is, and that's what's happening here at the ranch. It's shifting. It's showing.
Yeah.
It's preparing us. And life is going to end as we know it. It's going to shift. And you wanted to talk about shifting tonight, and that's how I perceive it. I think it's a very powerful thing for guys like you and me that believe, and other people. It's already shifted for us. We've accepted it. For other people that are still in denial, those are the people that are going to be woke up, and those worlds are going to collide, and they're going to see. And that's why I think the shift is going to come around. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't, you know, it's like we already experience hurricanes and earthquakes and tsunamis, and Mother does this to us every day.
there's nothing new going on that way. It's been happening forever. Mother does what she does. She is powerful, and she just does what she does. And we live here.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that our presence has to be out of respect for her, or those things that she does can become more powerful and more destructive.
It does seem to be, I mean, I know a long time ago I wrote some books in 82 and talked about a lot of these changes and things that are all unfolding right now. But it's kind of interesting, and people are going, oh, that's, you know, they really attacked. You know, it's like I had visions of the oceans rising and welling up and just coming in and things, you know, in the East Coast. And just, I just had a dream about that about three days before Sandy, which was interesting. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 days before. But, and you try to share these dreams with people, you know, and you have friends that live on the coast, you know, and you say, well, you know, they go, well, should I move off the coast? And I said, you know, according to my dreams and visions, I said, the real question you should ask is, why are you still there? But
absolutely.
But I told him, I said, but you know, I don't know what your soul needs for completion. You know, maybe this is part of your path. You know, we're all eternal, and maybe you're supposed to help other people transcend. You know, I don't know what's on your plate. You know, maybe it's another lesson in denial, you know, for your eternal spirit. You know, I don't know what's happening with you, but I know if for my own personal, you know, program, you might say, if I want to continue, you know, on this planet, you know, I'm going to realize I do have a physical body, and I'm going to keep my physical body out of harm's way. But, and if you do love yourself, you want to love all yourself, including your physical body, not go into the spirit world and say, oh, spirit will take care of me or this or that. I hear that all the time. People say that, nothing's going to happen to me because I don't believe it's going to happen. So it's not going to happen. And I'm trusting in spirit. And I said, well, how do you know spirit isn't standing right in front of you telling you to wake up and smell a coffee, you know? You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I said, our look at, you know, I just said, well, go down to the coast and believe the waves aren't going to come in and see what happens. You know, or go believe that great tree in front of you is not there, and then take a run at it and then get back to me, you know. And I go, well, let's test your theory, you know, your program. But, you know, myself, I mean, although I've had it happen, I've had some bilocation experiences and some pretty crazy things happen to me. You know, I can't do it on call. You know, I can't turn into light or walk through a tree or levitate or jump timelines, you know, at a moment's notice, you know, in the throes of a great quake or a hurricane or whatever else. So all I can say is that, you know, right now, for where I'm at right now in my present understanding and abilities, you know, I'm gonna take care of myself. I'm gonna pay attention to what nature's saying and what she's doing, and start talking to the land and listening to the land, and figure out, you know, and talk, make my own personal creator connection, and get real clear on where I need to be, and move on that information with loving detachment, you know, without denial, and that works for me, you know. But I can't really speak for other people, but it's worked for me, and it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah. I kind of, the whole theory of the earth shifting and it becoming violent and wiping off the coastlines and things like that. Hey, you know, it's doing it now.
Yeah.
But can it do it bigger? I can imagine so. And yes, it most likely can. Will it shift? Will the alignment of the planets on 2012 in December create such a happening? It's like I've had those dreams too, where the waves are coming over the mountains over in the Wallowa Mountains, and that's 600 miles from the coastline.
Yeah.
And I take off running and then realize and tell myself, what the hell are you doing? Where are you going? turn around and face the washout, because it's going to happen. You might as well see it coming. So I stop in the dream and I turn around and let the wave hit me. And before the wave comes over the mountain, there's these blue fish coming over the mountain, flying in the air. And this wave has such force that it's pushing the fish in the air, and they're flying fish. I mean, this dream was phenomenal. And but as it turned out, it was telling me to watch out for something else, and it happened the very next day, and it saved my life. It was a very powerful dream. But was it about the future coming? You know, hey, I don't know. I just know that it's going to come to all of us. And when a cleansing happens, it can happen on all levels. Mm-hmm. At Sundance, you know, my son and I were always amazed that when our medicine people showed up, they were all Heyoka, which is connected with the power of the great light, the lightning. And it would be sunny and hot and coming on June 21st, and we're all prepping for Sundance. And when that man showed up, the lightning followed him. And he'd show up that day, and that night, it would just, every year, it would crack lightning and rain and cleanse the ground. Because that man was conscious, that man believed, and he was open. And yes, he was a medicine man. And, you know, there's so many stories where the natives would tell the white people about things like this, and they'd line up and say this was going to happen, and it happened, and the white man goes, it's all coincidence, you know. And that's our whole scope on the whole thing of Mother's magic. Mm-hmm. She talks, and some people listen. And speaking of the song Ina Macaw, it's exactly the line in there that I talk about, is that some folks, with her magic and her mystery, some folks hear her sing. Mm-hmm. Some people are listening, James, and some aren't, and there's nothing we can do about that except for spread the songs that we know. It doesn't have to be a Lakota song. It just has to be a message of some force that says, wake up. Shift with her. She's shifting. Shift with her. Respect her. Show great respect for your children and the planet that they live on. Mm-hmm. And that's the shift that when you talk about shift, I see that happening, that we as a people need to shift our thoughts, our energy, and shift about the way we think about where we live. And our politicians that are supposed to be in charge, our leaders, you know, pray for them that they become conscious and they shift with her, that they wake up. And this life is not about money. It's about being here and living in respect and helping each other. Mm-hmm. And for me, I can't speak for other people. It might be a big boat and a set of skis and, you know, a Harley. I don't know. Some things really, you know, whatever blows your dress up, right? You know, but whatever destroys the earth, there won't be a dress to blow up anymore. You know, mm-hmm. It's just the material world has a great frustration when you live in it, and I've lived in it, and it buys me nothing anymore. And am I happy? Yes. Hey, I have a nice guitar to play my music on, but that's a necessary.
Yeah.
It is, and it brings a message. And I'm not saying that other people don't have necessaries, but I do think that we are greedy with what we think is necessary. Do we need that? No. Let's take another look at it and say, let's live simpler. Mm-hmm. We have children coming. We have children coming for generations, and let's leave something for them. And that is an age-old message, but we're missing it somewhere.
Yeah. So that movie, The Secret, that kind of brings my attention to that, where you know, they said, you can have everything. You can have anything. You can have the woman to die for, the the three cars in the garage, the Mercedes, the BMW, the 10 room house, you know, all this stuff, you know, you can have it all, you know, and all you have to do is wish it and, you know, hold the focus on it or whatever. And, you know, I always ask about that. Well, okay, so wait a second. How do you know that's your soul's purpose to have all those things? And who gave you that program? You know, why do you think you need all those things? And again, that's all about gaining acceptance and approval, you know, outside of yourself, from others, people, places, and things, you know, all this. And, you know, I listened to that. I was listening to this whole program, and I go, why can't we just be happy? Why are all these things going to make us happy? Happy's happy. It's just an emotion, you know. You can be happy no matter what. You can be happy when your wife is with you and when she's not with you. You can be happy, you know, when your lover's with you, not with you. It doesn't, you know, you can just be happy for no reason. And I think we've forgotten that, and we're so programmed now because of, you know, TV and social consciousness and whatever, that we just forgot how to be happy, just to be happy for no reason. And when you're happy, you're connected to the source. The source is just pure bliss. And the happier you are, the more you connect. But it's, you know, I just think somewhere along the line, even spirituality was hijacked, you know, by the material, you know, the material corporatism or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's just amazing observing that.
Well, when an economy is set up on buy, 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 and it, you know, nothing's, we can't make a living if we're not buying, then yeah, there's something going on that needs to shift there. I'm not sure how to do it. I'm trying to make a conscious effort of living with less. And no, if I had a high paying job and made lots of money, I know that I'm conscious enough now to live with less. And I would spread what I have around a little more. And I would still be spreading that message to live with less, because we're becoming multiplying over and over and again. And the earth is only so big. And when I go out in the desert, I look at her and go, how could we possibly consume this? This place is huge. And I'm just looking at a piece of her. But the reality of it is, we are getting larger and people are getting more, and we are consuming, or we've consumed over 50% of the planet in 50 years. And prior to man, however old man is, we have, up to that point, 50 years ago, we had hardly consumed 10% of the planet. And so the economy is based on consumption. What can it be based on to help the shift? That's a good question. I don't know the answer, but I do know one of the answers, and I don't think it's just one answer. I think it's multiple answers. It's multiple shifting in ideas and society. And one of them is, like I just said, living with less. Mm-hmm. Learning and teaching to live with less is an idea. It's just an idea. It's a thought from me, and I think maybe other people. I think the indigenous people have learned to live with less, and now our society has even changed our Native American and their whole structure of their society. And they have always lived with less. And I think that, you know, I don't know what they think or what they feel. I know what my grandfather was. He was a Cheyenne man, and he was Irish. Mm-hmm. And he was from both cultures. And he worked hard and died young. And in those days, in the 40s and 50s, you know, we automatically lived with less. We didn't know anything else. A fishing boat was a skiff, and we were glad to go out with a little horse. Little one horse engine, six horse engine, and fish or row out and do it. And we didn't have ski boats so much, you know. It's like the recreation thing wasn't so big, you know. Relaxing is, you know, we work so hard and we stress so much that we come home and the first thing we do is stimulate ourselves with a TV set, and we call that relaxing. For God's sakes, you know. I mean, I don't know. I'm wondering if our society knows what relaxing actually is. You know, we're so consumed with making dollars, and we've lost a great spiritual path.
Or you turn the news on, and that's not relaxing. I mean, that scares the hell out of you.
Yeah.
You haven't been on, you know, you haven't watched TV. I think somewhere in the 70s, I can't remember when, we kind of tossed our TV out the window. And every once in a while, when I'm traveling or I'm over somewhere else, you know, somebody has a TV going and I'll look at it. And one day I was watching, I was getting tires put on my car. I've told this story before, and I was at Les Schwab. And, you know, I all of a sudden the news comes on, this lady screaming at you. You know, she's going, agent. You know, she's going, code orange, code orange. You know, it's code orange. We're like, this is a special Muslim holiday. And if the terrorists are going to bomb us, they're going to do it today. And they can get you through your cell phone. They can get you, they can access your bank record. She was just going on and on. And they're out there. They're going to get you. And here's the 100 ways they're going to get you. And you know, I was sitting there just going, get me out of here. You know, the energy, and you could feel the energy like transmitting off the TV almost. And I go, this is sick. This is like, turn that off, you know? And I just had to walk out. I had to walk out of the building. Cause I was almost in shock listening to the whole spiel and what it was. And people just glued looking at it going, oh my God, you know, and they're looking at their cell phones and what am I going to do, you know? And I just went, my God, what? This is like something out of Brave New World you know, some future book or something. And it's here now. And that's the scary thing is that, you know, especially, you know, you look at all these NDA bills that are passed and where they strip you of all your rights whatsoever, not even a right to trial. They can arrest you and throw you in, you know, in the brig or whatever, anytime, anywhere they want. You know, a lot of these bills, these homeland security bills, all these things that are going out there, you know, we've lost our basic rights. And we lost them quite a while ago. You know, if you buy into this system and this illegal structure we call a system that we have right now, But we do have our God-given rights, and I think as long as we stand up to those and just say, hey, you know, you may think you have these abilities and these powers, but, you know, my power comes from a higher source. And you know, I think if we do that collective and just say, wait a second, you know, I agree to this. This is not my, you know, this is not, you know, these aren't the principles that I live by. So, you know, have a nice day. I think when enough people, you know, start standing up for that, you know, this whole thing is going to fall apart.
Yeah, I think some of our younger society, and this is not to bash anybody, but even people our age, you know, 35 and 38, yeah, have become complacent with our rights. And, you know, if the earth was wiped clean now, you know, it's like all the private land, you know, it's like when I was a kid, my dad used to take me fishing and we could fish the rivers. We didn't have to ask anybody to go in. The rivers weren't fenced off and they weren't private land. And we had a right to all the waterways in the 50s and 60s. And somewhere in the 70s, they sold off all the water rights to the landowners. Mm-hmm. The cattle people, the farmers, the ranchers, and that lived there among those rivers, and took away our rights to even drive or fish along them, and gave us little bits of pieces there to exist, to keep us sort of happy. But I remember some of those waterways going right out the window, and the right to be on that river again.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about how our elders feel when they got their land took from them? This is just a piece of the emotion they went through.
Mm-hmm.
imagine, you know, having thousands of acres that they didn't even call their own land. They just called it a territory. They hunted and fished and lived on it, and they moved on.
Yeah.
And they had territories that they called their own and were familiar with, but were not afraid to share it.
Uh-huh.
And now, if it all went back there, they'd damn sure be afraid to share it.
Yeah.
And now we have no rights to walk up on that land. And what reservation lands that are deemed reservation are native only is a necessary thing, you know. So our rights of and our freedom just to walk amongst the earth and feel her love.
Mm-hmm.
And feel that freedom has been taken. And you know what I'm saying, because even mineral rights and water rights, they've all changed, and they've taken away that property right, the right to walk down to the river by trading off the water right, which gives the owner of the property next to it the right to keep you off it.
Yeah. I know we have a lot of been doing a lot of ceremony here, and we have a lot of Native American friends. People come by and, you know, sell us fish and things like that. You know, it's great, and it's funny. A lot of time they'll come up, you know, and it's a really hot day, and they'll see this really nice pond we have, and they look at the pond and they look at me and they go, "Can I jump in it?" You know, and I go, "You were here first." You know,
yeah.
I go, "You were here first." And I just said, "Enjoy yourself." Oh God! And they just go run and just jump in the pond, you know, and swim around in there. And you know, it's kind of like, and we the ranch here, it actually goes out to the middle of the white salmon. This is the way the deed's written up. But I mean, there's no fences or anything. Anybody could go along the river and fish. You know, it's wide open. We've left it that way.
Awesome.
But you know, I don't think that's should be part of the program. But I thought it was funny too that Fish and Game guy came to me once, and I was fishing over there, and I was sitting there, and this otter was playing around right in front of me, and I was looking at this otter and just really picking up that otter energy, and you know, kind of having a little talk with him, and all blissed out, you know, and all of a sudden this guy standing looming down on me, and he goes, "Hey," you know, like this, and I turn around, I look up at him, and he goes, "Do you have a license?" Like this, and you know, he's got his badge and his gear and everything on, and I looked at him, I go, "That was rude," you know. That was I was here just all, you know, blissed out, communing with nature, you know, connecting in, and you know, it just didn't feel right, you know, and I didn't feel like responding, I guess, in the manner in which was expected, you know. And so I said, I asked him, "Well, do you have a license to trespass?" And he goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "Well, according to my deed, I own out to the river here. You know, what are you doing on my property?" You know, "We own the river." And I go, "Not according to my deed, you know." And then he goes, "Well, we own," you know. And I go, "I'm not in the water," you know. You know, like this.
Well, that power thing, you know, what do you do? That's I really think that it goes back to respect for the land. And yeah. I know a lot of the land gets closed off, and people that own wide chunks of land, they used to let people go in there and they trash the place. They leave the gates open, you know, and so we've lost that respect.
Yeah.
And I understand that view. So there's another shift we need to do, is show more respect for the land. And I've seen some things out in the desert where there's a land ownership and public land management thing going on now, where the lands are privately owned down the road on one side, and BLM is mixed in, but it's a private road. So they're calling it a respect and an experiment for people to show more respect, and the ranchers would allow more people in and quit closing off the ways. So I think that consciousness there is coming about. I really like that. I haven't seen that ever. And now there's two or three places I've seen that in some spots I like to go. And the gate was locked for years. And then so I went, hey, this is cool. No, I didn't go down that because right around the sign there was 4,500 piles of cow poop. And I went, this don't look like a good place to go, you know. But, you know, but the whole concept of the idea is that if we leave the gate open and let people in and ask them to respect the place and follow a few rules, then maybe the consciousness between the rancher and the public can work, you know, the cooperation there. So, hey, goes back to respect, right? You know, it's that. So there's some good things happening, you know. And I try to take note of some of that, you know, that consciousness that's going on. It's not all bad. It never has been. So I choose to live, try to choose to live in that place where if something I can do to help shift and change what's going on in society, at least the only thing I found is my voice.
Yeah.
My voice is the tool and the element that's going to help change what is defunct in our society. And if I can say it to you and you can say it to another and it makes good sense and it is a good idea, let's all say it and make it happen.
I think it'd be a good idea along the river here to sign out, you know, please respect the place, you know, pack your trash, things like that. Because a lot of times when I go down there, I have to bring back a bunch of beer cans and pop bottles and things like that, and it's like the whole town here likes to jump off. There's a big cement bridge there and the water's deep, and so, you know, during the summer they all go down there and jump off the bridge, you know. Like an ongoing thing, and you know, it's almost like a tradition, and I don't want to interfere in that, you know, in that tradition, and I want them to have access to the river and have fun the same time, you know. But it'd be nice to, you know, pick up their trash at the same time.
Right. You know, I went out to a place with a friend and my family many years ago, and we just went there to hang out at a lake. And the lake is over by Madras, and it was Haystack Reservoir, just a man-made lake. But the banks were just littered. And so where we were going to fish and hang, we cleaned up the whole area. Uh-huh. And my friend said to me, and he was, you know, we grew up together, and he said, now if everybody did this to every site they went to, there wouldn't be anything to clean up.
Yeah.
And true. And how true, you know. So consciousness of those kind of things are important, and getting people to respect the earth and not only just respect her, but start listening to her.
Yeah.
The reality is that there's a lot of great magic out there, and we've cut a lot and dug a lot away from her, and we've done some necessary things for society to be, and I think she's here for us to use. I have no doubt in my mind. Mm-hmm. But we have to have a conscious effort to make sure that it goes on and it's plentiful for what's going to happen. I don't get the whole spectrum as like, wow, there's going to be all these people when I'm gone, and how are they going to manage this planet? And do you see that, James? Do you understand how big of a question that is?
The way I see it is the planet's going to manage them.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, I would love to see everybody, you know, hold hands and sing Kumbaya and ascend and all living together in harmony and things like that. But, you know, I really do see the earth needs to heal herself, and she needs to go forward to the next level. And there's a lot of unconscious people that need an experience, you know. It sounds terrible, but they need a spanking. They need a wake-up call.
And when
this hits, I mean, when you have a hurricane hit or a great quake or whatever, you know, there's an old saying, there's no atheist in the foxhole. And during a great quake, you know, everybody turns to spirit, God, or creator and starts starts praying, you know, like, get me through this. And so, you know, these events are huge awakenings when they do happen, and they make people reevaluate, you know, their lives and what's important. And you know, if your family all gets out and you lose your house, you know, and then you have to go somewhere else and you find yourself living close to nature and growing your own food and everything else, you know, was that a bad thing? You know, maybe not. You know, maybe it wasn't. Because I've seen people leave banking jobs or stockbrokers and things like that. They lost everything, and they just gave up, and they went and lived up in the woods or whatever. And you talk to them now, and you go, God, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, mm-hmm. I had no idea how miserable and disconnected I was
mm-hmm.
until that was taken away from me. So, you know, I just think that people are that are conscious, that are living in harmony with each other and the planet, and that are in touch with nature, are going to find themselves, you know, in the right place, or you know, doing what they need to do. And the people are not, you know, maybe they need to move on. You know, maybe that's nature's way of saying, you know, we're going to clean up the gene pool a little bit and get people, you know, get people back in touch with nature. You know, I'm trying to see this as a positive thing, but, you know, and we're all eternal beings, basically. But, you know, I think we all have free will, and we make choices, and those choices create our tomorrows. And, you know, people that are making, you know, choices that aren't in harmony with the planet and the people or whatever are going to have the reactions or the lessons that come with those choices. And that's just the way the universe operates.
Yeah, and on that note, I have a really big question for you, and I wanted to hear your perspective on it, and because I'm curious, I'm not sure if I have a perspective, but you told me a story earlier today, or was it yesterday that we talked, and it was talking about the big fella, the Bigfoot, you know, and your encounters, and Where do you think that this society fits in with Earth, and what is their whole purpose here? I mean, do you think that they are here in this physical plane and then gone to another? And what do they serve here? What are they bringing to us? Why are they such a hush hush society, but they do exist?
Yeah, I'll tell you my perspective on it, and my opinions are always flexible. You know,
yeah.
So information comes in, I'm willing to change, and mainly I speak from experience. You know, if I haven't experienced something, I'll just say, well, this is a story I heard, but that's as far as I can go. But from my own experience, I've had some very spiritual encounters with Bigfoot and with an old gray one that lives around here. And I found them to be extremely wise, very, very spiritually advanced beings. And I've heard stories that some may not be so advanced. You know, there may be different qualities or different types of Bigfoot out there. But the encounter I had, well, I've had more than one encounter with them. But the one that was closest was a female that I ran into, and she was about 50 feet away from me. And I told you that story. She was moaning and crying out, and that was the only reason I got close to her, because she'd lost her daughter and was very emotionally distraught. But when I came upon her and I came to her with open hands to make sure, you know, to see, hey, I don't have a weapon, you know, can I help? And I was just pumping as much love as I could through my, you know, crack down through my heart to her and saying, you know, are you all right? Can I help you? Is there something, can I, you know, and so, you know, it kind of startled her a little bit to see somebody, you know, standing there, I guess, doing that. And she just finally stood up and she looked at me and she nodded her head. You know, what I got telepathically, a really strong feeling, was like, thanks, but no thanks. You know, we just don't you know, want to deal with humans in a way. And that really wasn't worth the words, but it was just kind of like, you know, this just hasn't worked out. You know, it's been that relationship kind of, you know, that thing. And you know, really most humans would try to capitalize on this situation. They'd try to get photos and prints and become famous and tell everybody what they saw, where they saw it. And then everybody would trample into their area and be going in there, and some idiots would be in there with guns. Ag one. But my feeling from my experiences and from other masters I've talked to and in my own experience, when I put it all together, I feel that the beings that I connected it with were very highly evolved in nature, in the nature kingdom. And they have abilities that are far beyond what we would give them. They're not dumb apes, you know, they're not some you know, what you, the missing link, you know, they have their own program going. But where we learn to control our environment and conquer our environment, they learn to live with their environment. And they're very, very evolved naturally, you might say. And I messengers, and they're the height of the nature kingdom, and they're coming down to those who have, you know, open minds and loving hearts and pure intent and making themselves known. And very few people are having experiences where they are, you know, most of them, a lot of people have just a chance sighting, you know, they might just happen to see one. But, you know, the elders out here say, if you go out to find Bigfoot, you're never going to find him.
Right.
If Bigfoot wants to find you, it will, you know, so.
Yeah.
You know, they say, consciousness right and get your heart right and put your intent out there and go to areas where, you know, it's been seen. And you'd be surprised, you know, if you go there with pure intent and loving heart and open mind, you know, they'll probably greet you that way. But I also found too, as I went into one's territory uninvited and I just blundered in there not paying attention and you know, I got a very rude awakening, you know, from it.
Mm-hmm.
No fault, you know, for not being paying attention, you know, and not being spiritually aware during the time. And so I went back out and I brought some apples and bananas. I know they love cucumbers too. And I left them as an offering, you know, and I apologized. And it was a whole different experience. I meditated before I came back and I kind of apologized and I didn't get the aggressive energy and what I was met with, you know. But, I mean, it freaked me out. And the person I was with, she freaked out too. Because you felt the energy and it was breaking branches and grunting. And you could tell very clearly that there was a big creature there that did not want you there, you know.
Yeah.
Coming in space.
I also have another question because this topic really, it thrills me. But I think if we took ourselves back to 300 years in our society, and the Great Turtle Island, United States of America, was only inhabited by indigenous Native American people, I wonder at that time if the Bigfoot was a closer encounter and more frequent event with the people.
Yes.
And do you think that, or do you know that, or do you think, and also the second part of the question is, if we were that way today and we were way more conscious and we were not such a consuming society, that we would frequently see the big fella more, you know?
Yeah. I definitely believe so. I noticed, you know, back in the day, you know, most of us were much closer to nature. We had to survive. You had to pay attention, you know, when you're out in the forest. But most people today that are out in the forest are loud. I mean, they're not listening. They're not listening with their inner senses. They're really loud. They've got their snowmobiles or their motorcycles or whatever.
Yeah.
and their Walkman's on and things like that, and they've just forgotten, you know, what it's all about. And I know from stories I've heard from elders that, you know, the Bigfoot would come down and they would point to something on the ground like an herb and say, you need to take this. And they'd go over and look at what it was pointing at and realize that even for their own health, they needed to take that. Or they would come down and say, look, you're getting too far away from the land and from nature, and you need to pay attention. And so that's a lot of from their stories, you know, that they viewed Bigfoot as another nation, and a nation that was very tapped into nature and aligned with nature, and they listened, you know, to whatever advice, you know, that gave them. But just that's the type of experience I've heard, and what I've seen out there today, you know, if we deal with it with respect, like you were saying, you know, if we go in there with respect and we go in there without take something from it or destroy its environment or you know, come into its territory without the right mindset or heart set, you might say, we'd be having experiences right now. But you know, I hate to sound negative or whatever, but a lot of these Bigfoot researchers are clueless. I hate to say it, but, you know, they're running around with infrared goggles, infrared gear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, flashlights, high-powered flashlights, and they're trying to catch it. And the same thing with the UFO field. You know, they're running around with all this gear and everything totally unconscious, trying to catch UFOs, you know. But I go, why don't you take a spiritual approach, you know, rise to the occasion, invite them, you know, and, you know, set your intent to have contact with benevolent beings. You know, try that approach. That's why we're so successful here. That's why we have the most amazing footage. You know, we've had thousands of people have come here and seen the ships because we're taking a spiritual approach to it. We're rising to the occasion. We're cleaning up our own consciousness, raising our frequencies, our vibrations, so that we can connect with these, you know, very spiritually and technologically advanced beings that are cruising around. And that's why we've been so successful. And so it's the same thing with Bigfoot. If people cleaned up their closet out, you know, cleaned up their consciousness, meditated, invite, you know, meditate on the Bigfoot, send them love, you know, and just say, I'd really like to know. And after you have one, shut up. Don't run around and tell the world so they'll trample over their world, you know, in their territory and make it harder for them to
right.
Things would definitely change.
It makes a lot of sense, that answer, because I had to ask the question because I try to envision what it would be like if we were more conscious and things like Bigfoot and UFO would not be such a great phenomenon. It would be or mystery, it would be a reality instead of a hidden secret and people out there with infrared scopes, like you said, and the TV shows like, is he here? Is it real? And there's a track and we've seen it go across the highway. And it's like, so what? What are we going to do about it? You know, it's like, You've sort of tried to prove that it exists. You think you got one on film. What's your purpose?
Yeah.
And the purpose is what? So what? We come in, say we come face to face with that society, and how are we going to deal with them? I mean, we got to deal with Chinese people. We got to deal with European people. We've got to deal with African people. We've got to deal with people that we know. And we have proven to exist because we dang near went to war with all of them.
Yeah.
And you know, so what do we want to do? We want to go to war with another society that doesn't want anything to do with us? Because here's what I think happened a long time ago, a few hundred years ago, is that they pointed at that plant and people listened. And they pointed at that medicine and people took it. And they told them, like you said, they're getting too far from the earth, and they listen. And then one day they quit listening. And so they gave up on us to be part of our society and part of our existence. And so now they live in quiet secrecy and hide. Or I'm not sure if it's hiding, but it's not in the existence that we know it. And they're able to travel through different planes. Maybe they always have, because they do come from another plane, but they can live in this plane, but you never see their traces, you know. Somebody asked, I watched one of the Bigfoot shows, and somebody said, well, if they're out there, then why haven't we found any bones? Because there's certainly, death is universal, so why can't we find their bones? And they went to commercial, and they came back, and they never answered the question. And the guy had a great point, you know. He was trying to find, and he was true from the heart. And you could answer that in a lot of ways. I mean, you could say, if they're slipstreaming, then they're dragging their kin back to where they came from, and you'll never see their traces, you know. Or, you know, they don't exist, or, you know, whatever. However, people like you and I who have seen them and who have experienced their presence, we know better.
Yeah.
Well, the answer to why is there no proof? They don't want there to be any proof. Or a guy like you that knows, you see one, you don't tell people where it's at. You might speak about it, but you're not going to send all your brothers out there to track this thing down and put it on a TV show, for God's sakes, you know?
No. Yeah,
there's more respect there.
Yeah. You know, one thing, too, is like, you know, I've lived here for 25 years in the forest, and I used to live in the desert, too, and you don't see bones very often. I mean, every once in a while you do, but, you know, you'll see a roadkill, or even a roadkill doesn't last very long between buzzards, the coyotes, the crows, and maggots, you know. They don't last very long. And I've never, I mean, I've lived for 25 years. I've seen bear. There's bears all over this place. I've seen two running across the road very quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've in the forest, I've never seen a bear, a dead bear, a skull, or anything. You know, I know they're out there. People will run into elk dead, you know, elk horns and things like that. You know, the horns will last the longest, and the skull and the horns, but the rest of the body's gone. You know, and so, you know, but just between cycles, whatever's on the floor is going to get buried very soon. It's going to get eaten, or it's going to get buried by the pine needles or the
mm-hmm.
or whatever else is there, and and nature cleans things up really fast, you know. So I think even a human, you know, if somebody died, I mean, you better get out there quick, because that his pieces are going to, or her pieces are going to get scattered all across the forest by coyotes and whatever else is around.
Right.
Yeah.
So, now the desert's a little different than that, because I'm a bone collector, you know. I mean, I hunt the deer horn and the elk horn, and I hunt the forest and the desert edge.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I mean, I've been hunting these areas for years, and I see elk skull that I've seen 10 years ago still there, that I collected an ivory from 10 years ago, and that skull is still there. Now, the desert is like that. It's drier, and it's colder, and there's not pine needles. But also, you're right about an elk goes down or a deer goes down. I can walk up, I can cut the horn off that elk and come back 2 weeks later, and that thing is scattered from here to hell.
Yeah.
And the bones are still there, but it's picked clean in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
It's picked clean.
Uh-huh.
And then the bone starts to disintegrate. And yes, the desert kind of does take care of that, but it takes longer out there. Here in the forest, in the rainforest where you live, you know, the wet starts to dissipate those things a lot quicker.
Uh-huh.
And the pine needles bury them, and they're harder to see and find. They may be there, but they bury quicker.
Yeah.
So, you know, is Bigfoot in the desert?
Well, who knows? Probably he's been seen there.
And you know somebody that's seen Bigfoot in the desert?
Yeah, actually, I do. I know some people. I'm not going to say where again, but
yeah,
I know some people that know where there's some caves, you know, up around where you were talking about in the Oregon desert, and they've seen Bigfoot walking back and forth in front of these caves. But I think Bigfoot can go wherever Bigfoot wants to go, because I've seen that thing disappear. I mean, that female did not get to the forest, and she vanished. And I just scratched my head saying, okay, I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I have maybe two beers and maybe two glasses of wines a year, you know?
Yeah.
And I hadn't had one then. And I'm not subject to hallucinations. So, but this thing vanished before it hit the forest. It just phased out. And I've seen them phase out and travel as a white ball of light, you know, through the forest. So they can, I think they can go wherever they want. I think it would be pretty hard to take something down like that, you know, and get the bones or whatever, like you're saying. You know, they probably, you know, there's probably, if you see one, there's probably more than one, and they would probably pick up whoever, you know, was hurt or wounded or even killed. They'd probably deal with it in their own way. You know, I'm not sure how they'd do, either by burial or by, you know, taking it back to its origins if it is from another dimension. But it's an interesting thing. I think they're in a lot of places that you ordinarily wouldn't think they'd be, but they choose whether you see them or not or connect with them.
Right. And, you know, it's like I experienced something in the desert one time. I can't say that I saw anything, but I felt that energy that you talked about earlier when the woman was with you. And it wasn't frightening. I was walking up a trail with a friend, and I had a bandana on my head, and it was a desert trail, and there wasn't any tall grass. There was no way to lose a dime hardly there. It was so dusty, you know, and there was a dry creek bed right next to the trail, and it was warm, so I had this really nice, bright-colored Native American print bandana on, and I took it off and put it in my side pocket, and I walked a little ways, and then I decided I wanted that bandana back on, and I reached for it in my pocket, and it was gone. Mm-hmm. And my friend was behind me coming up the trail, so I asked him if he saw it. He said, no, I didn't see the bandana. So I walked back where he just came from, where I put it in my pocket by this little juniper tree. I remember this little juniper tree along the trails, because I had to walk around it because there was a pine tree there blocking the trail with a big limb, and I couldn't just walk through it. So I went around this little juniper tree, and that's where I put it in my pocket. So I went from there back, and then I came back, and he was walking up in front of me. So I went from there forward to him, and I stopped him. I said, all right, give me my bandana. Quit messing with me. And he says, no, you know, hey, Chasing Shadow, I'm not messing with you. I don't have your bandana. You know, like, kind of lay off, dude, you know. And so I went back, and I checked three or four times. I checked around the juniper tree and my exact footprints, and there was nothing there. So then I came back up the trail, and I stood by a little juniper tree, and I stopped, and I felt this energy to my left in the dry creek bed about 35 feet away. And I looked over there, and it was just like a heat wave coming off the street, you know, this ripple. And I started talking to this energy, and the first thing that the energy said to me was, I said, oh, no, first thing I said to it was, give me my headband back.
Yeah.
I did, and I couldn't believe I was speaking to this thing, and the telepathic message that came back was, we have given you many gifts out here.
Yeah.
This is your trade. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, you are welcome.
Yeah.
But I felt that it's like, I never saw anything other than what I told you what I saw, but I felt like, why is the word Bigfoot coming into my head and won't leave?
That's why, you know, fortunately, but you know, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been great, you know, sharing a lot of these stories. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming and drumming and singing and sharing, you know, the ancient wisdom. So keep up the great work, and I'm sure we'll be doing more of it.
It has been a great honor and a pleasure to be a guest at your ranch, James. Thank you, and on this station.
All right. Take care.
Good night.
It's James Gilliland, your host, signing off. Have a great evening, and watch the skies, and, you know, watch around you, and especially when you get out in the forest, you know, walk with respect and tune in, you know, walk with an open mind, a loving heart, and pure intent, and who knows, you might start seeing things. Anyway, have a good night.